This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. On the programme today, we have another View from the Vatican, and we look forward and look back as we prepare for this year's Christian Aid Week. But first, some music. Glorious things of thee are spoken. Huddersfield Choral Society and Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken. Canon Philip Gillespie is currently living and working in Rome as rector of the Beda College, a college for men from around the world who are training for the priesthood. This puts him at the very heart of life within the Vatican, and last week he very kindly sent us his thoughts following the announcement of the death of Pope Francis and his experiences of attending the funeral. Today he joins us again to give us a very clear picture of the next steps. Canon Philip, good morning and welcome.
Good morning and greetings from Rome. The big news is the chimney has arrived. The Vatican firefighters have attached a chimney through the roof of the Sistine Chapel, which will now be linked to the small stoves in which the ballots of the conclave will be burned, producing the famous white smoke when it is a positive election, black when there is not the required 89 votes for any one candidate. Time was that it was dry or damp straw which helped enhance the colour of the smoke. These days the ballot papers are burnt with various chemicals which help to clarify the colour of the smoke. Some people might see this as a rather quaint, if outdated, method of alerting the world to an outcome. Others will see it as continuity and tradition. The very idea of a conclave, literally with a key, locking people into a room, even though that room is a highly decorated chapel with a magnificent Michelangelo fresco, may appear to be a rather blunt way of ensuring secrecy. But as much as secrecy, there's also a sense of solitude. These cardinals, representative of the church present in so many different cultures and parts of the world, are given the space and time to discern as best they're able what the Spirit is saying to the churches, and to elect someone who will be a shepherd not only for the Diocese of Rome, but also for all other dioceses around the world, which hold that sense of communion with the Bishop of Rome, who through their own bishops express being a communion of communions. When the 133 cardinals process into the Sistine Chapel on Wednesday afternoon, they will already have had many days of discussion and prayer and discernment alongside the other 120 cardinals who, having reached the age of 80, do not have a vote in the conclave process, but whose wisdom and experience and perspectives have been invaluable in these days of what are called the General Congregations for the College of Cardinals. Sometimes it's referred to using the Latin word, the murmurationes, the chattings, the getting to know people, the expanding of the horizons which the individuals may have brought with them, but which now need to be wide enough to embrace not only their particular or local church from which they are drawn, but even more powerfully, a Catholic or universal ministry, which the man elected as the 267th Bishop of Rome will need to have. How long will it take? Nobody knows. I somehow doubt that it will last the 3 years of the longest conclave, which was held at Viterbo in Italy in the year 1268. But it is a time of prayer and of deliberation. So pray for the cardinals. Pray for the cardinal called the Camerlengo, Cardinal Kevin Farrell, originally from Ireland, but who is naturalized and was a bishop in the United States of America. Pray for all those who are involved in the day-to-day preparations, both around the funeral of Pope Francis last week and now the process of the solemn election of his successor. Lots of hard work, lots of busyness, many late nights for them all. But they do it for the good and smooth running of these days. And they are animated, as Pope Francis would have said, by Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel, and also a prayer that the gospel may truly be a gift of wisdom for the world.
Chosen, Loved, music by the International Staff Songsters of the Salvation Army, and taken from their album, Lord, You Are the Song. And my thanks to Canon Philip Gillespie in Rome, who's very kindly agreed to send us some more reports as events unfold in the coming days at the Vatican. Christian Aid Week starts next weekend, and who better to tell us all about it than our local Isle of Man representative, Louise Whiteleg.
Well, this year's Christian Aid Week is the 11th to the 17th of May. But did you know this year we're celebrating 80 years of Christian Aid? Can you believe it's 80 years?
That's one of those mixed anniversaries, isn't it? Because to say that you have been successfully changing people's lives for 80 years is wonderful. But at the same time, why is there still so much to do?
Christian Aid's aim has been and will always be to eradicate poverty. And as we all know, there's no one answer to that problem. Greed is at the root of a lot of the problems that we suffer in the world. I mean, we know the 1% has got more than all these millions of people living in absolute desperate poverty. We know we've got this massive inequality, this massive imbalance. And Christian Aid has always been there to mobilise the Christian community and to get us to come together, particularly during Christian Aid Week, but all of the year. But during Christian Aid Week, it's about mobilising the Christian community to fight against that type of injustice so we can work towards ending poverty.
Over those 80 years, you've got stronger and stronger at working with partner organisations in the places of greatest need. So you're strengthening the local organisations to help people to work their way out of poverty, not just parachute in with a bit of aid, but to work into a better future.
Originally, where we started from, it was just after the Second World War, and all the churches came together and they wanted to help their brother and sister churches across Europe who'd suffered with the bombs. And all the British churches came together and we all sent money, aid, help to our European brothers and sisters. And it's grown from that base of sharing Christian love and Christian kindness. Originally, it was a very imperialistic approach that we had. We're coming in, white saviours, we know what you need and we're going to help you. And in the last 30, and especially the last 20, 10 years, that model has really, really shifted. So when we're going in and helping with aid, actually the first thing we're doing is listening. Because there's no good us parachuting in and saying we've got this fabulous idea, but it doesn't work in their context, in their culture, in their environment. I think back, I have to say, a happy birthday to Mr. Harry Owens, who was 90 this past couple of weeks. Sorry, Harry, had to get that in there. Because whenever I think about aid done well, I think about what we did with the beekeepers. When Harry went over to Burundi all those years back, so 6 years now, when Harry went over to Burundi, he did something fabulous. He gave them a gift of knowledge. And that gift of knowledge and how to look after the bees, how to get the most out of the honey, how to protect yourself with the clothing, how to build the beehives, that knowledge has grown in the local population and they're completely self-sufficient. And you can't take that knowledge away. And that's how Christian Aid is working. It's enabling people to work their own way out of poverty. It's not giving them something. It's ensuring that you're listening to their needs and plugging that gap. And that's what we're trying to do this week in Malawi. We've got case studies of two really lovely ladies, real powerhouses of these communities, Victoria and Olipa. And both of these ladies are just small subsistence farmers. This is more like a large allotment. They've got a small parcel of land that they need to make the most of. They haven't been making the most of the land because they haven't had the skills. They haven't had the knowledge. They haven't had good seed that's fertile seed. They don't know about fertiliser for the soil. And that's what we're doing with this year's project in Malawi. We're working in a really remote area and we're working with the local community. And we're teaching, we're educating, and we're setting up peer-to-peer groups. It's taken people like Victoria and Olipa and it's giving them the skills that they can then share with their neighbours. So that, like Harry did, that seed of knowledge and confidence then grows amongst the local community.
And of course, like Harry did, it's using all the things that you've got there in the community. It's not dreaming up some fancy solution that isn't available where these people are. And also, do you think peer-to-peer teaching works so much better?
Absolutely, I think so, because it's woman to woman as well, or it's youth to youth. This particular project, about 60% of the people we're helping are women, and then about 20% are youth. And then the remainder of people with different abilities. So we're actually helping people who, when they're living in a patriarchal society, the people who are a bit more vulnerable are actually supporting each other as well. So the strength that comes from that, empowering these people to work their own way out of the poverty, is just lovely.
And I think to put it into context, it isn't that the men have walked away from this or the men are being excluded, but often the men will travel away from their homestead, as you might say, to try and find some work. Because we're talking here about still one of the world's poorest countries, aren't we?
Yes, there's great levels of internal migration because, as you rightly say, the men move to the work. So they'll move to the capital to become truck drivers or taxi drivers or bus drivers, or they'll move to where they can fish or work in different industries and then send money back. And it's the women who are generally left literally holding the baby, having to support themselves. So it's a very different lifestyle to the lifestyle that we're accustomed to. And I think that's one of the challenges, but also the beauty of Christian Aid Week, because absolutely we have challenges and issues here, but it's different when we're looking at places like Malawi. We come together here and we support ourselves, we help other people, we support the food bank, we support our friends and neighbours and those in need locally on the island. And that's kind of really what we're wanting to grow in Malawi, but we're just starting from a different point. We're starting from a point where 70% of the people live on less than a dollar a day. It's poverty that's not something that we can easily comprehend. And we're needing to take a step back and find out really where do they need help. So Olipa, for example, her dream is that she wants to replace the grass roof that she has on her house with steel sheets. She wants to be able to pay the fees so her children can go and get her education. Victoria wants to be able to buy shoes for her children to be able to walk safely to school. It's starting from a different point. So the beauty of Christian Aid Week is that we get to think about ladies like this and their stories, empathise a little bit with a different way of life, and to think about the consequences of what we've done perhaps in the past when we think about the impact on the global south of climate change and how they're suffering at the moment. There's no rain, and then there's all the rain all at once. The seasons have shifted and it's stopping their crops ripening, it's destroying their crops, it's impacting on them having enough food to eat today.
And isn't it also about teaching them resilience? There are extremes of climate that we can do little or nothing about, but there are some little things. So again, it's that resilience so that they're not completely wiped out. And we've still got these resident problems of inadequate, clean, pure water supply. You know, those kind of things that we take for granted when we turn the tap on and we've got as much clean water as we need. That's not an option in Malawi, is it?
Not at all. And that's actually one of the foundations of this project. As we're working with these village people, we've built in elements of public health, as we'd call it over here. So talking about hygiene and looking at how to segregate dirty and clean water and how to make the most of the water that you've got. And as we've been having these conversations with these people in Malawi, they're coming up with their own ideas. So they're now planting more trees, and the trees that they're planting are mango trees and guava trees. So they're getting, not only are they helping seal the soil with the roots from the trees, but they're also getting the fruits from the trees to feed the family. We're having conversations, and we will know this one, everybody on the island, the cook stoves And so the project also involves getting people to cook more efficiently. So they are creating less pollutants themselves when they cook. They are also using less material to cook with because they've concentrated the heat through this cook stove so they can cook more efficiently. So it is taking the local issues and working with them to see what solutions are available in their context.
A small amount of money makes a huge actual practical difference, doesn't it?
A pound from here grows tenfold over there for the difference that we can make, and it's also targeted aid. By using this model of teaching the leaders in the community and then the peer-to-peer training and education, it then grows again. It's a different way of doing aid, and it also pivots back to our Christian roots. That pound you throw in the bucket, or that pound that you throw in the red envelope, is a seed. And when that seed lands in Malawi, it grows and it helps so many different people in ways that are going to change down the generations, because it's knowledge, it's behaviour, it's training, and those are things that you can take with you wherever you go.
Louise, you are passionate about everything that you do for Christian Aid, and you're inspired by your deep personal Christian faith. But I think it's important to say that Christian Aid reaches out to people of all faiths and none.
Oh, absolutely. We help everybody who needs help, people of all faiths and people of non-faith. But one of the things I really love about Christian Aid Week, it's our opportunity as Christians to wear our heart on our sleeves and to be able to go out and engage in conversations with people. And some of those conversations can be challenging, but in having that conversation, we're also planting a seed. We're showing people what we believe as a Christian. We're showing people what we do and how we work and how we believe and have hope and have faith that there is a better future, and there is a better future for everybody. And it's a real opportunity to be able to go out there and say, this is who we are, this is what we do, and this is what we believe. Come join us.
So what does Christian Aid Week look like? Because it's not just a week. You'll be having, I'm sure, in churches and community spaces in the months to come, fundraising events. So is it really a question of looking out for all the publicity?
Yes, please do. And if you've got any great ideas, all I'm going to say is go for it. So yes, Christian Aid Week, it is the 11th to the 17th of May. That's the official week. Things are always a little bit different on our island. And we have a project, and it's our project for the year. So really, Christian Aid Week, we are springboarding that new project for the year ahead, which is our project in Malawi. And yes, there's going to be coffee mornings and dancers and all sorts of activities taking place across the island. So if you do see one, please do come along and support us.
Thank you to our Christian Aid rep for the island, Louise Whiteleg. If you'd like to know more about this year's project, or indeed anything to do with Christian Aid, have a word with Louise. You'll find her on Facebook, or you could text or phone her on 47 4275. 474275. And now let's finish with a look at our notice board. This afternoon there'll be another bilingual service at Bigarrow Chapel, just outside Kirkmichael. It's this afternoon at 2:30. The theme will be Manx Knots and Crosses, and the soloist is Brisha Harkin. Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett will lead the service, and there'll be refreshments afterwards. And this evening, the Mariners' Choir will be in Sandygate Chapel for a service starting at 6:30, followed as usual by supper and community hymn singing. The annual May Day Collectors' Fair at Dorby Schoolrooms is tomorrow between noon and 5 p.m. with a wide range of collectibles along with the church's bric-a-brac bonanza in the basement. Soup, sandwiches, cakes and coffee, as well as afternoon teas, will be available throughout the day. In true Dorby tradition, there'll also be the cake stall and the plant stall. This Collectors' Fair tomorrow is the launch event for a six-week matched funding grant campaign by Dorby Church, supported by the Church of England, who've committed to match, pound for pound, all the monies raised between tomorrow and the 16th of June to help support a maintenance programme for a more sustainable building. Also tomorrow, there's a special concert in Quails Hall in Ramsey. It'll be given by Dr. Peter Littman, the Director of Music at the Cathedral in Peel, and it's to celebrate the installation of a new organ in Quails Hall. So that's tomorrow, Bank Holiday Monday, at 3 o'clock, with free admission. On Thursday the 8th, the island will commemorate the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, with a commemorative concert and a drumhead service to be held in the Royal Hall in the Villa Marina. Seats for this are bookable through the Villa Gaiety box office in the usual way. It starts at 7 p.m. on Thursday, and all proceeds will benefit the Royal British Legion Isle of Man branch. On Friday the 9th, between 10:30 and noon, there's a VE Day coffee morning with entertainment and a sing-along led by Wendy McDowell and friends at Onchan Methodist Church Hall. There'll be refreshments and a VE Day quiz. No charge, but donations will be welcome. And finally, the annual Cool Chapel plant sale is next Saturday the 10th from 2 till 4:30 in the Cool Chapel Hall on Cool Road in Braddon. Homegrown bedding plants, cakes and bric-a-brac will be on sale. Admission is just £5 and that includes afternoon tea. And that's all we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9. A little different this week, as between 9 and midnight I'll be bringing you Today at the Guild. As the Manx Music Speech and Dance Festival finished last night, it'll be a review of 8 days of wonderfully entertaining performances. Then we'll have a chilled hour together in our virtual lounge between midnight and 1. And I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week, and a very good morning.